As distribution system operators face an increasingly challenging and complex landscape, data collection and use has never been more important. So to learn how EDF is adapting and innovating in this space, I'm actually joined by my guest, Sebastian Ruiz, CEO of EDF International Networks. So welcome, Sebastian.
Thank you.
Before we get started, tell us a little bit about EDF International Networks. How do you fit into the bigger picture?
Yeah, that's a good question. EDF International Networks is the subsidiary of VDF Group. So, you know, VDF Group has many activities in the electricity power sector. And our role and our mission is to deal with any project in the field of distribution, electricity distribution networks, around the globe, but not in France. So that's what the international part is. So we deal with every country apart from France.
Ah, I see. But today we will be looking at France. But, I mean, feel free to bring in your global perspectives.
Yeah. Of course, we build all the our expertise and topics based on what we've been learning from France, from our main country of footprint.
Indeed. And when we were preparing for this conversation, it became very obvious that the role of DSOs, it's changing. It's perhaps a bit challenging. Tell us about some of those challenges that you're experiencing.
Well, I think we're, as DSOs, we're facing similar challenges across the globe. Well, obviously, the first one is already to run our networks, which is a quite important large network in Europe, meeting all the requirements of classical requirements. But we're facing two additional challenges, if I had to summarize. The first one, and we all know, and all the exhibition is about it in similar parties, is to be an enabler of the energy transition. And in this field, if I share a few figures, we have a lot of distributed generation to connect to our distribution grid. In fact, for France, it's 90% of the new capacities of distributed generation that is connected to the distribution.
Did you say 90%?
90%. Of renewable new renewables, which are connected to the distribution, so that's the size of it. It's about 5.5 gigawatts per year of new connections, and it's growing. So that's the first part of the challenge, is to connect all the new generation distributed. The second one is obviously to deal with the growth of demand in terms of connection, and an illustration is the capacity of charging, electric cars charging that we're deploying. And it's interesting, it's quite a similar figure. Last year we connected around 5.1 gigawatts of new charging capacities for electrical cars. So you see, 5.5 in generation, 5.1 in distribution. So that's the size of the challenge. And we use a word in EDF for that. We call it the second electrification of France. The first one was after the Second World War, and now it's the second one. So that's just to seize the challenge. So that's probably the first major challenge we're facing. The second one is to adapt to climate change. It's a reality in terms of impact on the grid. Here again, if I share just one figure, in the last 2 years, we had 34 major climate events in France. Major event for us is when it has impact on more than 100,000 customers. Okay, so that's 34 events in 2 years, and the usual rhythm in the previous years was 5 per year. So that's 3 times more than what we were expecting on a regular basis before. So that requires a lot of adaptation of the network. So apart from business as usual, I would say that's the two major challenges.
Apart from business as usual, that's these are significant challenges, and you know it's interesting that you mention these now because resilience is such a key theme here at Enlit this year, and you know you mentioned the balance between having to decarbonize, deal with these major weather events. It's a lot. So surely resilience is a key focus for you as well.
Yes, it is. It's a key focus, and you see the size of a challenge, and to be able to address these challenges, we need many things. We need to leverage a number of resources. Well, the first one is obviously finance. The second one is probably to be sure that we have the resources and the capabilities, the human resources to be able to deal internally and in the supply chain. And we also need innovation. Just here, maybe if we share a few figure, size of investment to be able to cope with this in France is about 5 billion per year in the 15 years in the distribution part. So that's the size of investment. So it requires a significant effort. The second thing is the size of the recruitments we need in terms of human resources. This year, in the distribution area, we've been recruiting around 3.5 thousand new staff. That's slightly below 10% renewal of the staff, so it's quite a growth in terms of human resources capabilities. Okay.
Can I interrupt you there?
Sure.
Do you have a large enough pool of human capital to tap into to support this
growth?
Well,
maybe you've seen some of our colleagues spoke about it in some other sessions. But no, it requires to really run programs with schools in order to bring enough people into first science, then electricity, and at the right levels. But it needs a full organization to be able to, at the end, have these resources. But that's an exciting challenge. It's good for young people.
Indeed. So you touched on finance, you touched on the human resources, and then you mentioned innovation as well. And, you know, that's a topic I'd like to delve into a little bit more, because when we talk about DSOs and the challenges, sometimes the innovation gets pushed to the side. So give us some more information about that. What are you talking about there?
Yeah, it has it takes different forms, different aspects in the field of generation. Of innovation. When one thing comes to my mind, and it's really currently being done. In order to integrate this new generation and deal with this new demand, while maintaining a level of investment that is acceptable, we have innovation in terms of flexibility. There's a long in France, we've been using a tariff which is adapted. It's base tariff and peak tariff, okay, for consumption. And traditionally, it was made in the 90s, okay, in order to move some of the consumption from day to night, okay, and it allowed to shift around 28 terawatt hour of consumption from day to night, okay? And it made sense at the time because of a load curve of the consumption in France. And at this very moment, we're shifting, and regulation allowed us to do this. We're shifting the low tariff times, okay, hours, during summer, during the day, okay, at noon, when there's a high production of solar. So it's not technical, okay? It uses the smart meters to be able to do this. So it's a new way to do it, but it's a way to practically deploy some flexibility, and it's kind of innovation.
It's good that we're moving on to this, because in terms of the smart metering program and the use, the collection and use of data, which is really what we're talking about today. But you say you've rolled out a smart metering program. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Sure. It's a large program that started in 2019 and ended up in 2022. Okay, so it's been over for a few years now, and it's been the deployment of 35.7 million smart meters all around France, obviously, we're benefiting now from this deployment. It has several benefits. Well, the first one was expected from the beginning, better billing, better customer information, shorter time for intervention. We have 99% success when we're sending orders to the meters just to change, for instance, the power levels that is that will be used by the customers. So direct effects that were expected, and it also has some not unexpected but good surprises, I would say, in terms of users. And we using them, for instance, for predictive maintenance. But to get to these this extra value of smart metering, you often need to couple the data that are coming from your metering activities together with the data that are coming from your geographical information system or from your customer base information or from weather forecast, and it's by mixing this information that you start to deliver extra value operationally.
That's quite a challenging thing to do, surely, because I mean you need to ready yourself internally in terms of skills and processes to receive and process this data. I am not an expert, so I'm obviously simplifying this, but I mean, what are the challenges? How do you do this?
Well, I mean, obviously, you have to integrate new skills, data analysts. That's the obvious part of it, and the technical part of it. But the difficulty is to have it fully integrated into your daily business, and that's, you're right, a major change, a major shift. People were used to do certain type of work, for example, non-technical loss. They would be doing it a certain way. But now they will be doing it a fully different way. Okay, you still have technical losses, but the difference is with the information you get. Okay, you get information, for instance, from your meters saying that the meter has been opened. Okay, it's a safety information, but you get it. You realize that you have drops, not normal drops in consumptions. Okay, so you get a capacity to identify non-normal situations, okay, or suspect situations, and so you through your data treatments, okay, you're able to, for instance, have the 100 first more suspect cases, and so you will send your troops there. I'm taking this example, but there are many examples, and what is interesting is to be able to bring people into the change, and that's sometimes that one of the aspects that is underestimated in terms of change. It's a lot of training, it's a lot of new tools. You bring together in the same room people which are doing the job the old way, because we're still exploiting a network. But on the same place, you will have the people maintaining the communication chain of the meters, and you bring them together. And in terms of change, it's something you have to pay attention to, and it's a long process, often underestimated.
I can imagine. You did mention maintenance or predictive maintenance, and perhaps we can drill down into that a little bit as well, because I would assume that the data that you collect actually helps to really guide that that maintenance in terms of investment planning, timing, etc.
Yes, that's another key application. Well, it's not a direct one, but if I take an example in terms of maintenance, we're able to move from regular maintenance to predictive maintenance. Okay, here again, it's a mixture of several data that helps you to do this. You receive, for instance, data when you have a neutral line that has potentially a problem. You get signals which are excursion of tensions, okay, which are recorded by your meters, okay. they record it, so quality of the quality of the electricity you're supplying is recorded. So when you have such a situation, then you have a number of excursion, abnormal excursions. Okay, you get this every day into your system because the data is coming to your system every night. Okay, and through this you get an information that a line will probably get into a default in the coming week, for instance, because you get the soft signals that a failure is coming. Okay, so once you get that, you are able to every morning get all the situations that have a high probability of default in the coming weeks. So people in charge of planification of work, okay, they will be able to decide on the basis of this information if they change the work that is planified in order to be able to conduct the work during the day and avoid a failure and emergency interventions. Okay, so it has a lot of benefits if you look at it. Well, the first one obviously is an improvement of the quality of service that you're delivering. The second one is it reduces cost, because if you have an intervention, an emergency intervention, then you have to pay it extra time. It could be on the weekend. It could be so. As a DSO, you were able to regulate and decrease costs by using this. So it's only good things. But you have to integrate this flexibility that the work that had been decided the day before can be changed in the morning on the basis on the information that you recovered during the night from your meters. So here again, people doing the exploitation of the network, people doing the exploitation of the data, okay, they come together and they change the program of interventions. So that's the kind of things that you can do with smart metering data. It's really core business for a distribution company, but these are really things that are currently being deployed and put in place and bring a lot of value.
It's fascinating, and I can imagine.
I forgot one thing, which is important in the process, because obviously it's a learning process. Okay, so each time you have such an intervention, you get the feedback from the people on the field. Okay, telling you, okay, you told me you had a high level of default risk. We went there, and yes, we confirm that it's the case. Okay. So your software, as I know, there's a lot of artificial intelligence. It's not fully, but it's a learning process, and we get to a level of quality where it's about 99% sure. Wow. When the system is telling you there will be a default, you will find something on field. So it's the learning process gets you to good results.
Well, this is it. And before I interrupted you, apologies, I was going to say the system is learning and the people, the team is learning as well. So it is quite an interesting landscape to work in, I can imagine. If you had to perhaps give advice or share some of the key lessons that you've learned throughout, if you just take the implementation of a smart metering program and what you've learned from that, if you could share maybe two key takeaways with DSOs here. Any lessons, any advice, anything that you think is important, what would it be?
Well, with smart metering programs, first you have to be humble, because it's very different depending on the countries. Each DSO is expecting different things from its smart metering process. But if I see two critical, I will say three. Okay, the first one is if you're rolling such a program, don't forget the health and safety issues with the supply chain, because it's in general a large number of meters that we are deploying, and with a lot of staff coming, because there's an extra charge of work. Okay, so you bring in a lot of new staff in general to be able to deploy at the right rhythm. So there's a key issue about the safety of the supply chain. Okay, so that will be first priority, of course. The second one is to take time in defining what you're expecting, because the level of possibilities is coming from what your requirements will be from the meters, and this kind of measure. Will you measure excursion of tension? Will you measure opening of the of the hood of the meter, for instance? All of this you have to decide first, because if it's not measured, then you can't be. When you're measuring many things, you can have good surprises. So it's probably the second thing, and the third thing is obvious. We talked about it a lot already. Is that change management is key? Okay, obviously it's a major transformation of the way we work, and the skills of the people. At the end, we're still exploiting a network, so we still need to be able to deliver a large number of activities on a day-to-day basis. But the work of the people is transformed, and you're mixing these competences from the electrical networks with the competences of data scientists, but they will be in the same room, and it's a large... together with deployment of meters, you really have to have a dedicated project on change management.
So maybe it's data and people at the heart of the DSO evolution.
It is.
Indeed. Sebastian, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
And thank you to everyone who's joined us for this live podcast recording. If you don't want to miss an episode, please feel free to subscribe and follow.